Welcome to HN Pod, the show where we bring you the top stories and most interesting discussions from Hacker News. I am your host, Sarah.
And I am Mike. And Sarah, I have to say it. Happy episode 500.
Happy 500th to you too, Mike. It is wild to think we have been doing this for 500 episodes. Thank you so much to everyone who has been listening and building this community with us. Today, we are covering yesterday's top stories from August 26th, 2026, and we have a really packed board for our milestone episode.
We really do. Today, we are looking at two massive releases in the open weights AI space with GLM 5.3-Flash and Qwen 3.8-Flash-Next. We also have some huge database news with AWS acquiring Duck Labs, a very serious discussion about the U.S. State Department pausing immigrant visa applications, and finally, we will be remembering the legendary actor Tim Curry, who sadly passed away.
Let us dive right into the AI news, because the landscape is just shifting so fast right now. The top story yesterday with over 1,000 points was the release of GLM 5.3-Flash. This is coming out of Z.AI, and the big headline here is cost efficiency.
Exactly. According to the artificial analysis trackers, GLM 5.3-Flash is now the cheapest way to reach an intelligence index between 52 and 57. We are talking 8.7 cents per task. It has completely displaced models like MuseSpark 1.2, Grok 4.5, and even DeepSeek V4 Pro from the Pareto frontier. It is just incredibly cheap for how smart it is.
And the Hacker News comments were entirely focused on what this means for local and hybrid setups. A user named Mastrack shared a really fascinating look at their home lab. They actually took the plunge and bought 4 of the new Spark nodes. They even mentioned buying QSFP networking cables from AliExpress because they are literally half the price of Amazon, which is such a classic Hacker News detail.
I loved that detail. But their workflow is what's really interesting. They are using a 2-node DeepSeek 4 setup for mundane tasks, but they noted that it spins its wheels on novel, highly complex work. They are hoping GLM 5.3 can bridge that gap, though there was a pretty healthy debate in the thread about whether these smaller flash models can truly replace the frontier models like Claude Opus 4.8.
Right. A user named Detroit Throw was highly skeptical of the benchmarks. They pointed out that when it comes to making intelligent decisions about gray areas and software architecture, the smaller parameter models are still a long way off from Opus 4.8. Another user named Zerd agreed, saying the main difference is that the smaller models just do not consider edge cases. They are great at the happy path, but they are oblivious to the gotchas unless you explicitly hold their hand.
Which makes sense. But on the flip side, people are finding incredibly specialized use cases where these flash models just absolutely kick ass. A user named Bad at Names said DeepSeek 4 Flash is incredible for reverse engineering and bug hunting on older DOS and Windows device firmwares. Someone else is using it attached to Ghidra through a Model Context Protocol, or MCP, to reverse engineer obscure Spark code. When you hook these models directly into your tooling, the value you get for pennies is just staggering.
It really is. And speaking of staggering value, that leads us perfectly into our second story. Qwen 3.8 Flash Next just dropped, and this one has a fascinating architectural twist that the community was geeking out over.
Yeah, this is super cool. So Qwen 3.8 Flash Next features a 125 billion parameter main model, but it is supplemented by an additional 51 billion n-gram embeddings. Only about 6 billion parameters are activated per token. The memory management implications here are huge, and the thread was full of people trying to figure out how to run it on their hardware.
I had to read through the comments to fully grasp the n-gram embedding concept, but a user named A11er broke it down perfectly. Basically, when you train a large language model for a long time, it starts overwriting specific facts with generalized concepts. You need generalization for intelligence, but if the model loses the specific facts, it hallucinates.
Right, so the n-gram cable acts like a low computational method for fact recall. It is almost like a highly integrated, better form of retrieval augmented generation, or ROG, but it doesn't eat up your context window. And because it's just an index of facts, it doesn't need fast compute.
Exactly. People in the thread were talking about offloading the n-gram parameters to a fast NVMe solid-state drive, keeping only the hottest ones in system RAM. A user named CMRDXPorcupine actually got this working on a DGX Spark with 128 gigabytes of unified memory. they were getting 80 tokens per second on the prefill and 12 tokens per second on decode, with the model weights in memory and the n-grams paging from the disk.
That is the beauty of open weights. The community gets their hands on it, and within hours, you have people writing custom paging systems to run 176 billion effective parameters on a single workstation. We also saw Simon Willison in the thread doing his usual rigorous testing. He ran the model through his 3D Pelican generation prompts.
I love that he is still doing the Pelicans. He mentioned he was testing it on a 1-bit quantization from Unsloth and was not super thrilled with the results compared to the older Qwen 3.8 27B model. But others pointed out that judging a model on a 1-bit quant is a bit unfair. And when he bumped it up to a 2-bit or 3-bit quantization, the results were suddenly amazing.
It just shows how far quantization has come. We are squeezing so much intelligence into such constrained hardware. It is a great time to be a tinkerer. But let us shift gears from AI to the data infrastructure world. Our next story is AWS acquiring Duck Labs, the company behind the wildly popular open source database DuckDB.
This was a massive story, over 1,000 points. Duck Labs announced they are joining Amazon Web Services in early September. The founders, Mark and Hannes, wrote a really thoughtful blog post about it. They bootstrapped the company for 5 years, grew it to over 30 people in Amsterdam, and DuckDB now sees over 1 million downloads a day.
They reached that classic founder bottleneck. They realized that scaling up a massive sales and support organization would pull them away from the technical work they actually love. AWS gives them the infrastructure and reach to take DuckDB to the next level. And crucially, they are keeping DuckDB and the rest of the Duck stock open source under the MIT license.
The DuckDB Foundation will continue its stewardship, which is great news. But Mike, you know Hacker News. The moment a beloved open source darling gets acquired by a big tech giant, the cynicism flows immediately.
Oh, absolutely. The top comment from HoboFan basically said, "I am glad the foundation is in place, because out of all the big organizations, Amazon has the least regard for keeping technically interesting projects alive and will probably bulldoze it in the next reorg."
People were comparing it to Oracle acquiring Java or Google's graveyard of acquisitions. But the most interesting part of the thread was the deep dive into Amazon's corporate culture. A user named NixonX69 said Amazon will drive these brilliant engineers to quit within a couple of years just over having to fill out MBRs, which are the monthly business reports.
Anyone who has worked at AWS knows about the MBRs. It's this grueling process that consumes a huge chunk of the month. But then a user named Darkwater asked the most 2026 question ever. They asked, "Could you not just use an LLM to write your way out of the MBRs these days?"
And the responses were hilarious and tragic. Someone said, "Yes, you use an LLM to write the report, and then the managers use an LLM to summarize it." Another user, JMP Man, said it is already happening. LLMs evaluate the entries, rewrite them, and score them. But of course, their human manager was still unhappy and requested additional cryptic formats just to maintain that classic middle management pain point.
It is the ultimate corporate dystopia. The AI is doing the work, the AI is reviewing the work, and the humans are just stressing out in the middle. We can only hope the Duck Labs team is insulated from the worst of that bureaucracy, because DuckDB really is a phenomenal piece of technology.
I hope so too. Let us move to a much more serious story that generated a lot of intense discussion yesterday. The Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. State Department is pausing immigrant visa applications.
This is a really tough situation. A lot of people might not realize the mechanics of how visas work in the U.S., but a user named Out of Here broke it down brilliantly. It's incredibly common that to renew a U.S. work visa, you actually have to physically leave the country, go to a U.S. consulate abroad, get the stamp, and then come back.
Right. So imagine you have a normal life in the U.S. You have an apartment, a job, maybe a dog. You fly back to your home country just to do this routine administrative renewal. And suddenly, the State Department hits pause on all applications with no timeline for when they will resume.
Your appointment is canceled. You cannot get a new date. You are stranded outside the U.S. You cannot work, you might lose your job, and you cannot even get back into the country to pack up your belongings. It is just a devastating state of limbo to put someone in.
The thread had a really deep philosophical debate about this. A user named Conductor made the point that this is not a bug in the system. It is the design. When you are on a visa, your re-entry is never a right. It is a privilege that can be revoked at any time. They argued that the system is built specifically so you have to leave, giving the government a chance to block you from coming back.
But others pushed back hard on that. A user named BubbleThink pointed out that consular officers are career public workers who generally do not deny visas for arbitrary reasons. So when political leadership wants to throttle immigration but cannot legally just deny everyone, they use these weasel tactics. They add bogus background checks, mandatory trainings, or in this case, indefinite pauses to just clog the pipeline.
It really highlights the human toll of these bureaucratic decisions. When we talk about tech and startups, we are so often talking about highly skilled immigrants who built these companies. Treating their lives and livelihoods as political footballs just feels so unnecessarily cruel. It was a sobering read, but a really important reality check on the fragility of living as an expat or immigrant.
It definitely was. For our final story today, we are remembering a true legend of the screen and stage. Tim Curry has passed away at the age of 80. The Guardian ran a beautiful obituary covering his incredible career.
Tim Curry was just a force of nature. Most people know him as the flamboyant Dr. Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which he originated on stage in 1973 and then brought to the screen. But his range was unbelievable. He was the Lord of Darkness in Ridley Scott's Legend, buried under massive horns and red makeup. And of course, he terrified an entire generation as Pennywise the Clown in the 1990 miniseries of Stephen King's It.
He really was the master of transforming himself. The Hacker News thread was just an outpouring of love and nostalgia. One of the best discussions was about his role as Long John Silver in Muppet Treasure Island. There has always been this popular internet observation that Michael Caine was great in A Muppet Christmas Carol because he treated the Muppets like real actors, while Tim Curry was great because he treated himself like a Muppet.
Yes, but a user named AceJohnny2 pointed out that Tim Curry actually emphatically denied that interpretation in a New York Times interview. Curry said he saw the Muppets as actors with distinct personalities, and it was astonishing how quickly you see them as people.
Someone linked a fantastic video essay explaining this. Curry did not see Kermit or Miss Piggy as props. He treated them as fully formed characters with emotional lives and comic timing. That respect for his scene partners, even if they were made of felt, is what made his performance so incredibly alive and theatrical.
I also loved the comment from a user named 12bits. They said Home Alone 2 was one of the first Hollywood movies they ever watched with their non-English speaking parents. Now they are 42 years old, and whenever their parents visit, they watch Home Alone 2 together as a family tradition. It is just a beautiful testament to how Tim Curry's iconic, smarmy hotel concierge character crossed cultural and language barriers to bring people together.
He had a stroke back in 2012 that left him with mobility issues, but he kept working, doing voiceovers for animated series and games. He once told The Guardian, "I have had the opportunities, and I am still showing up. I think that's what you have to do. You have to keep showing up." And he really did, right to the end. He will be deeply missed.
He absolutely will. And that brings us to the end of our 500th episode. Thank you all for spending part of your day with us, whether you are running local AI models, fighting with corporate MBRs, or just enjoying some classic movies.
We appreciate every single one of you. We will be back tomorrow to cover the next batch of top stories from Hacker News. Until then, keep building and keep hacking.